Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Busy little week this week.
Busy little week.
I thought we'd start with something that happened when I woke up this morning and you had already posted something about it, which is the new Apple Arcade stuff, including some like games that either were in the App Store or are in the App Store, kind of being made available without any in-app purchases or anything inside Apple Arcade. And the possibility that Apple Arcade is going to also be like a way for maybe some classic iOS games that have outlived their, you know, their revenue cycle on the outside to be brought up to code and put back in the store. It's an interesting idea.
It is an interesting idea. And as you're just speaking about it right now, it made me wonder about a future. So right now, bear with me, you know, Apple's got this whole situation unfolding with the App Store, right? They've gotten a lot of scrutiny from the government, from regulators. They're getting a lot of pushback from people, you know, developers who are in the App Store, et cetera. And what this made me think was, you know, hey, this whole thing of like bringing these apps, these games that were popular in the App Store maybe back in the day, into sort of a subscription plan had me thinking, well, it's almost like there's an App Store inside the App Store now, right? Like the arcade is like a subscription service within the App Store of stuff that Apple has curated and, you know, proactively sort of said, like, this is good. We know this is good. We've scrutinized it. It's legit. It's above board. If they expanded that to something including apps, and I know people have suggested they might do that before, but it might open up this weird world where it's like, well, what if the App Store becomes more lenient? Like Apple is looser about the restrictions of getting stuff in the App Store, but within it, there is a curated, you know, App Store within an App Store where maybe they're like, yeah, but this is the stuff that we've really like closely looked at, like it's all and like it's no ads and no junk and no scams. But there's like a free app store out there for everybody else who wants to get in there and doesn't require us paying us a percentage or whatever. That's just sort of the more open marketplace. But then we still have our little, like, if you want like the good stuff, come over here. I don't know. I don't know. It's just an idea that occurred to me.
I don't think I can see them doing that. But you're right. At least with games, they've got this kind of like the set of levels where they're compensating people for building games that are complete games that aren't like trying to scrape out in-app purchases and stuff. And I like it. I have not liked Apple Arcade as much as I thought I would, just because a lot of the games were not that appealing to me. There have been some that I've absolutely loved, but I go a few months sometimes without having an Apple Arcade game that I'm playing regularly, and I don't think that's ideal for a subscription service, right? But this is an interesting step forward. It shows that they're continuing to kind of recalibrate what Apple Arcade is, and I really like this idea of, you know, you get these games that are good and that are classic, but have sort of outlived their time in terms of being a revenue generator, and having Apple come to those developers and say, well, why don't you dust it off and get it working on all of the current platforms and put it in Apple Arcade, at which point people will play it and, you know, we'll give you some money to do that or whatever their specifics of the business deal is. I kind of like that idea. And I thought you were going to a different place when you said it gave you an idea, because I thought you were going to a different place, which is, would Apple ever find a method that would allow old games to be brought essentially like an emulator, right? Of the like old video games on video game consoles, so that you could pull out some of those classic games from the past and make them playable. I would say to that one, probably not, again, for some of the same reasons. And like non-Retina games aren't going to look good, and they're going to be weird screen sizes and all of that. But it is a problem that these mobile games just sort of vanish and are unplayable after some period of
time.
Right,
not an issue that you tend to run into as much with things like books or movies, right? Like there's stuff that looks dated. You know, you can pull up a show from the 80s and it's all letterbox or pillar box or whatever, and it's like, oh, it looks a little weird and the quality's not great, but sure, you know, I can still enjoy this as a show. But games are a lot trickier because you need stuff does not translate as well on modern hardware, though, and there are plenty of emulators for this kind of stuff.
The idea that you've got, I mean, for mobile, you've got to have a mobile device that you keep around. Like, people will keep around an old console with cartridges or discs or whatever, or an old computer, potentially. And there are also emulated versions, but like, less likely to keep around an old phone, and harder to, not impossible, but like, we don't have like an easy iPhone emulator where you can pop software onto, because the software was also locked in the App Store. Right. And that's the problem, right? Is like, this stuff that could be like a classic game. Like, I saw the Doodle Jump is coming back, or came back, and I thought, oh, Doodle Jump. And then I also thought, like, that's a great example of a game that like everybody had and played. And then like, it just disappears and it's gone. It's just gone.
Right.
Forever.
Yeah. I mean, I've thought of, what was the game? The Icon Factory ski ball game.
Oh, Ramp Champ.
Ramp Champ, which they did. Somebody else brought back later. I think made a deal with them. Essentially,
yeah, they sold it off. Yeah,
they sold it off. Yeah, but like, that was a great example of a game that was fabulous and of a specific era, and then it just, you know, they weren't going to put the work into redoing it or keeping it updated for all the new device sizes and et cetera, bug fixes, et cetera. Because games, the long tail on games, I think, is a lot shallower.
Right. That's why Apple Arcade is an interesting idea for them, right?
Like, yeah,
for a second life for these games that are not current anymore.
But what this makes me wonder is like, how does this work? Are they paying the developers to update this? Are they doing it themselves?
I think they're paying the developers to update the games for an Apple Arcade edition, and then also promising some amount of money as people. You know,
well, there must be a revenue share.
Yeah,
for
my guess is, and I don't actually know this, but my guess is that Apple Arcade is a combination of upfront payments and also royalties based on. Lauren and I were talking about this earlier today, because it's based on what? Based on time of use, maybe. Yeah. Based on launches, maybe. And the
downloads.
Reason I say it's probably a mixture is, if you made it just about time of use, I think that there would be abuse, right? I think people would try to maximize Apple Arcade revenue by making you try to stay in these games. And some good games are not games that you stay in forever. So it might be based on launches or
installs or something
or some combination in order to come up with that figure. But since it's a subscription service, I assume there's some ongoing payment going on. But I also
there has to be.
Would assume that there is either an upfront payment that's in advance, or there's an upfront payment plus the ongoing, some combination of those things.
Yeah,
and I'd imagine that's going on for these old games too, is Apple's basically like, hey, we want to make it worth your while for you to get like Zach Gage put all his games in Apple Arcade.
Sure.
And he is the best indie game developer on iOS. He is, I think, hands down the best. I love his games. And he was just like, yeah, let's just put them all in there. There are also some games that are on the App Store that are modern games on the App Store that are just also now in Apple Arcade with all the restrictions turned, like Mini Metro. And there was Mini Motorway was an Apple Arcade title, but they just put Mini Metro Plus in there. And as far as I can tell, it's just Mini Metro, but
it's all
unlocked.
The stuff unlocked. Yeah. Right. And it's interesting too, because there have been reports that Apple has been paying advances in the sense of almost being a studio for some of the stuff that they're on there, right? Which is a very, another sort of slightly different model in terms of how it works. Like, they're subsidizing games that they think will draw people to arcade.
Yes.
And that makes sense.
But there's different models. They're obviously trying different models here, right?
Sure.
Because they've also got like the classics.
Well, I mean, and I think this has been the challenge, right? Is that we've talked a lot about Apple and gaming and Apple's struggles with gaming in the past. And I think this keys to the fact that Apple did not feel like arcade was necessarily performing up to expectations. And part of that was making me wonder, as I wondered in my little link piece this morning, like, how many of the people using arcade have gotten it for quote unquote free? You know, because they subscribe to the Apple One bundle,
right?
And they just get it thrown in, as opposed to how many people are going out of their way to subscribe directly to Apple Arcade. I have no idea, and Apple's not going to tell us. But I have to think that part of their push on this is feeling like they're not getting necessarily their money's worth, as it were, for the store yet, for the Apple Arcade yet. But they're trying to find ways to make it more attractive to either continue engagement, or, I mean, engagement doesn't matter as much for Apple as it does for the people who make these games, presumably, right? Like, engagement is good, but what they want is subscriber growth. And the only way to do that is to continually expand and to have the games that people want to play so that the deal looks good, right? People are like, oh, $5 a month, but look at all of these
games.
It's
a catalog. You gotta. Or, and this is actually a thing that I suspect is going to get addressed in an iOS update down the road, or you want to have this perception that, like, you go in the App Store and there's this game you see and it's like, oh, I get this because I'm a subscriber. And that right now is not the case. Like, Mini Metro and Mini Metro Plus are different games in the App Store, but I gotta think that down the road they're gonna make those the same to the user, the same app, and one of them is going to have a price on it and the other one is not. Right. And if you're an Apple Arcade, and they might even do a thing where it's $4.99 free with Apple Arcade kind of thing as an upsell. Right. Because you could see that as a way to sell bundles and to sell the Apple Arcade stuff. Is what if some games in the App Store as you're browsing are just like, you can buy it. Sure, you could do that. But you could also just get it for free on Apple Arcade.
Here is where this gets a little dicey for them, because what you're describing is essentially the model used by a lot of other game subscription services, including like Microsoft's Game Pass. And I think that potentially gets a little bit dicey because that whole foo-for-all with the like not letting other game platforms, game streaming stuff in the store, they start to encroach a little bit on the territory of like, well, we have our service here.
Yeah, but
you can't have your service.
I don't buy it because their argument has always been you can submit your games individually and we'll rate them, right? And these would be individual
games in the
store.
And I get that, but I'm saying that in a world where they're already undergoing such intense scrutiny about their monopolistic, you know, antitrust prop, like all of that stuff is coming to bear on them. I think making their service seem more like the things they would not allow. I don't know. I think it's risky. I'm not saying they won't do it. I think it is business. It's strategically risky from a legal standpoint. Mm, I think.
I don't buy that one. But I do think that what they can't do is have two versions of Mini Metro that are identical as separate app IDs that you can download separately, but are essentially the same, except one of them you have to pay for and one of them comes free with Apple Arcade. It's like, no, just hide that behind the scenes, right? If I'm an Apple Arcade person, I should just see Mini, and I search for Mini Metro, I shouldn't get two Mini Metros, one of which I get for free and one of which I have to pay for. Like, what?
Well, sure, yeah, I'm not worried about that.
They shouldn't do that.
I don't think they will do that. I think that doesn't make a lot of sense. But I think what is interesting from the standpoint of them saying, like, this is, you know, you can buy it or you can get it from Apple Arcade is, in some ways, that is not what was the promise of Apple Arcade at first, right? Like, the promise of Apple Arcade was everything on this is basically exclusive insofar as being on iOS. And I think that proved not to be something that necessarily worked for them. Because I think there's a positive effect for them for having stuff that you just described, that model where it's like, you could pay for this, but it's available in Apple Arcade.
Right.
Is a positive effect because the money starts to look like, well, it's not just about things I can't get anywhere else. It's about getting a good deal for the stuff I can
get.
It's
unlocking stuff on the store that other suckers have to pay for, but because I'm an Apple One subscriber, I don't.
Right. So the problem with Arcade to a certain extent of having only exclusives is those things are not proven, right? You can't play them somewhere else and say, I don't know if this is good or not. I know it's only in Apple Arcade, but I don't even know if that's a game I want to play. Whereas if it's available and like, you know, for pay and you're like, oh, well, that looks interesting. And that looks interesting. And this game looks interesting. And I can go to Apple Arcade and I can get all three of those. Well, that's a little more. Yeah. I don't know.
I like that they're most above everything that happened today. I just like the idea that they're trying stuff because that shows that they care and that they're trying stuff. Like, this is, because Apple is such a black box, we always are looking for like little hints about like, is this actively being worked on or are they doing the minimum possible and essentially there's nothing going on? And just like me glomming onto the Thread radio in the HomePod Mini, right? Mm-hmm. And the temperature sensor, it's like, ooh. Maybe they care, because otherwise, why would those be there? And Apple Arcade, it's a similar thing. It's like, what level of care do they have for Apple Arcade? Are they just kind of going to continue go through the motions and having new games and all that, but they're not going to rethink the premise at all? And today, I look at it and I say, oh yeah, no, they're they're actively like iterating and experimenting and trying pivoting stuff with Apple Arcade. That's so good to see because, you know, otherwise it'd be on autopilot.
Well, I think the answer to part of that is, I don't want to say this is their like, you know, last hope or anything, but like they've tried a lot of stuff with games. And I feel like there's a lot of places where you cut your losses and you say, we're not doing that anymore. And I think they've realized if we cut our losses and we stop doing this, what's left? Like, we kind of just have to go back to the way we used to do stuff. And that was, you know, topping out, essentially.
It doesn't, and I'm not saying killing Apple Arcade. I'm just saying that if all Apple Arcade ever is what its initial conception was, and they just keep on, they got people there and they make deals with developers, and there's still, you know, there's new games flowing onto the service every month or every 2 months or whatever it is, that's fine. But like, that's like, okay, well, we invented it and now we're done and we're going to walk away and let the machine run.
Right,
and that's less inspiring, especially if you don't think the machine is necessarily perfect the first time, which it never is. It's much more inspiring to see that they're still trying to make it better.
Yeah.
Like, I think this doesn't always happen with them.
Yeah, and I think this is potentially one of the upsides. I know we often talk about the downsides of it, but I think it's potentially one of the upsides to Apple focusing on services growth is it's harder to let services remain stagnant. You can let a product sit on the shelf for 3 years, and if it's selling, it's selling. But if a service gets boring, people stop subscribing. And I think, you know, the interest showing that these are active going concerns, whether it's this or Apple TV Plus or Apple Music. I mean, they do a lot of stuff with Apple Music. I don't follow it as closely because it's not something I'm as engaged with, but I feel like they have tried a lot of different things with Apple Music. And I think that the fact that they're so focused on services tells me that they are committing to a certain degree to updating these things and to finding new ways of doing stuff or new stuff to put in there.
And the bundle, the beauty of the bundle.
The beauty is in the bundle.
Dan, the beauty of the bundle is that there are some of these services that are kind of outliers, right? Arcade, news, fitness, where, and fitness launched with the bundle, right? But like, where if you have to make a sale on its own merits, that's one way to approach that as a product, right? Which is like, oh boy, you got to give us your $5 because of Apple News. Oh, right. But by adding in the bundles and the big bundle that includes all of those services, that's really interesting because then you're playing, I think, a different game. You're playing a, can I throw in enough perceived value that it kind of accrues to the larger bundle to help it out, right? Because it's like, well, I need a reason to go beyond, or I need to invest more value in this bundle so that when we raise the price later, you won't want to drop back down because you found value in these kind of edge services that are not the core. Because the core of that bundle is, obviously, it's like Apple Music. Maybe it's iCloud. Like TV Plus. There's stuff that's more at the core. Although you could argue TV Plus is a little bit like this too.
Currently
like
once not you're, so much, yeah.
Really. Once you're in a bundle, I guess what I'm just saying is that Arcade being in that bundle is interesting because it makes Arcade play a slightly different game. Oh, I didn't mean to say that, but there it is. Because now it's not just about, can I get people to hand over $5 a month? It's, right, $5 a month, $7 a month? I don't know what it is. I don't remember. I'm a
Arcade's
bundle person
five.
Now. I've forgotten learned. Now it's just like, can we add some value to the bundle? That's it.
Well, I think that's the interesting thing about the bundle is also that it forces Apple to play a game that's a lot more about pricing than it typically does. Like it's had a rubric for pricing, right? Like it wants to make a healthy profit on its products. You know, it doesn't do low margin stuff. But when it comes to a bundle, so much of it is about the pricing, right? Because you're literally saying, if this were Apple from 10 years ago, they said, well, your bundle is, you know, the cost of buying each of these services individually.
Yeah.
There you go. What a deal. And everyone's like, no, that's not how this works. But no, Apple has to, because these things have a price, but they also have a value, you have to figure out what is the value of these things put together as opposed to what are the prices of these things put together. Because if they just added the prices together, nobody would subscribe to the bundle. It wouldn't make any sense. So instead, they're saying, well, what is the value of all these things when you put together, and how much is sort of the average person willing to pay for these things together? And again, I just don't think that's a way that Apple has traditionally done business in the past, right? They've had their way of calculating prices for their products and how much they think they're worth, and, you know, et cetera. Like, you know, hey, these, they're more expensive than competitors, but they're worth more because they're better products. You're paying for a better class of things. And that's not quite how it works when it comes to services. And I think they're actually being pretty smart about it for the most part. Like, not something I would have thought they were necessarily, like, was right in their wheelhouse, but it does, I do think it's proved to work for them.
What a world we live in.
Indeed.
Services Apple. Services Apple. Oh, speaking of the App Store, I'll at least mention, I put a link up yesterday to Trip Mode, which I love. It's a great app. If you ever tether your Mac to a cell phone, or you're on a very slow internet connection, or you're on a metered internet connection, it's so great because Trip Mode lets you control. I've written about it a bunch of times. You basically can go app by app and say what apps you want to have network access and which ones you don't. And you can monitor how much data they transfer. And this is great because it lets you do things like, if you're on a very slow connection, not have photos backups happening. Because the Mac, especially, like, it's not smart enough to say, oh, I'm on a slow connection. It goes like, oh, I'm on the internet. I'm going to back up all my stuff to iCloud now. And if you're on a very, very slow internet connection, that's really bad because it's going to swamp your network traffic and everything that you actually want to do in the moment is going to slow down. Also, you might have apps that totally eat your bandwidth, like photos syncing again. And you can just, like, turn them off and say, no. And you can, there's settings, you know, so you can have different sets for different things. So if you're on Wi-Fi on a train, you can have very different settings than if you're at home. Anyway, it's a great app. The story here is interesting. It's on the Mac App Store now, which is bananas because it was all kernel extension based, which is like the lowest level, and Apple's trying to get rid of kernel extensions. So how in the world could it get on the Mac App Store? And it's a great story, which is Apple introduced this thing called network filters. I think they might have introduced it in Mojave. It might have been Catalina. But the idea was, it's a way to do what Trip Mode does and what a bunch of other apps do without requiring a kernel extension. I think all the VPN apps use this. I think maybe Little Snitch uses this too. I think this might be what Little Snitch uses for its stuff that it does. And my understanding is it didn't really work until Big Sur, like actually work. But the Trip Mode 3 is based on these network filters. My understanding, though, and this actually goes, it's a similar story to what Rogue Amoeba, I think, went through with Audio Hijack. With Audio Hijack for M1 Max, where you've got software developers using new Apple features that are not widely supported yet, that are replacements for the old kernel extension technology.
Right. We talked about this with the storage stuff.
Yeah, so it's Apple. Yeah. Exactly right. So it's Apple creating, which is really great to see, right? Apple is creating new, what Apple feels are more secure and also approved ways to do stuff on the Mac. And they're saying, this is the carrot. The stick is, we're going to kill kernel extensions. You gotta stop doing kernel extensions. We're going to make it harder and harder, and it's already pretty hard. And then we're going to turn them off. So you can't do that. But we built an API for you. And in this case, it's like, and with Big Sur, it finally works. Great. My understanding is that you then submit your app to the App Store in the case of Trip Mode, and the App Store is like, what? And they actually, this is not to tell tales out of school here, but my understanding is that, like, they had to point the App Store to some tech docs on Apple's website saying that, no, this is allowed. And then they're like, oh, great, you're in. And they're in. And the beauty of it is, like, this is so much functionality that never used to be allowed in the Mac App Store.
Right.
Now, Trip Mode, it's a subscription in the Mac App Store. The fact is, you'd be better off buying it directly from them. And if you're a Set App subscriber, you just get it. It's in Set App. So speaking of subscription services, right? So there are lots of other ways to get it. But I love that it's in the Mac App Store because, like, not only does that show that Apple has made some progress in terms of building new pathways for developers that are blessed by Apple, which is what the Audio Hijack is, my understanding, is the same way. Like, they've got an extension, but it's not a kernel extension. It's an Apple blessed kind of extension. It's just it's a little bit of positive news, because apps like this were, there was no way an app like this was ever going to be in the Mac App Store. And it's such a great app with such great functionality. And here it is. It's in the Mac App Store. That's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, and it, again, like we were discussing with, in terms of the like Apple Arcade, it gives you hope that these, they have an interest in keeping these things going, right? Like that they continually like, oh, we realize that the stuff that we did before that, like, you know, prevented many of these apps from working or made it hard to install them or whatever, like,
right,
we realized that that annoyed people. Like,
and
instead of saying, you just can't
things.
Do that anymore. Yeah, exactly. Instead of saying you can't do that anymore, they're instead saying, like, well, let's find a way to
yes.
make that work.
What?
Which
why
should,
do you want
should
this?
Make you hopeful, not only for the Mac, but I feel like should make you hopeful for iOS
yeah.
too, right? Because it realizes there's whole classes of apps that can't exist on iOS right now.
Right.
And iOS in some ways goes the opposite direction, right? Where it's like, well, we made it super secure from the start. So we've had to like build all these frameworks onto it, as opposed to the Mac, where it's like you could always do these things, and then we had to lock it down.
Right.
So I'm hoping that means that they'll sort of take a similar view to stuff on the iOS side eventually, and say like, "Wow, we realize this functionality is stuff that people want. Like, maybe we can find ways to safely implement it on mobile
right.
too."
I think it in the past on iOS, it's been a mixture of Apple, feeling like they had too many other things, too many other fish to fry, basically. Mm-hmm. And also a policy of like, no, we're going to keep it locked down. But I suspect, I always think when I go to WWDC and I'm talking to people, I'm like, they're not, oh, this is a policy. It's more like, oh man, we can't do that. like that there's the truth behind the Apple's policy, which is like, it's just a huge amount of work and they've got other things they're working on and they just can't do it. But I think you're right. I think we've reached the point with iOS and iPadOS especially, and you're seeing it with the Mac stuff. I do hope it carries over. This idea that what you really just need to do is build a way that you feel is safe and secure, but a way to let this stuff happen, because this stuff has value and that's why these apps exist on the Mac. And
exactly.
this is a great example, which is like network filters. It's like, why would we ever do that? And the answer is, well, let me give you the reasons. VPNs, security systems, network metering apps like Trip Mode. Like, we got reasons. And somebody inside Apple said, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. We should probably do that. And I think on the Mac side, the impetus was wanting to kill kernel extensions. Like, that was the, like, okay, here's the premise. We're going to kill kernel extensions. Look at all the kernel extensions that currently exist on the Mac. How are we going to kill kernel extensions? And they went through the list. It's like, okay, we're going to create user space device drivers, and we're going to create network filters, and we're going to build a new sound extension system or IO extension system or whatever. Right? Like, they were prompted by, we're going to kill kernel extensions, and then they had to come up with solutions for that, which...
Yeah, FYI, kernel extension's my favorite Clue character.
Kernel extension?
Kernel
yeah, he's
extension.
Got that... He's got... his arms are longer than you think, is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, way longer. He always gets mm-hmm. killed, though. He always gets murdered.
Yeah, he's good at blocking shots. He's more of a basketball player. Plays for the Washington Generals, even though he's a colonel.
He's a Kentucky colonel. It's fine.
Oh. Does he have to wear a white suit?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay. I wrote about user automation this week just because.
Ah, yes.
It's mostly because I bought a Stream Deck Mini, and so that sort of prompted me to spend more time with Keyboard Maestro. But I finally wrote an article I've been wanting to write for like 6 months now that's just about this one feature in Keyboard Maestro, which is like literally you can take a little screenshot of something and say, click this.
I saw
and it
that.
Looks at your screen and it goes, oh, there it is. Click. It's just amazing that is a thing that works.
It's wild.
But it totally
works. I've never, yeah, that's a fascinating feature.
Because how do you script, if an app like Audio Hijack is not scriptable, and I understand, I actually had a back and forth personally with Paul Kafasis from Rogue Amoeba this week, because I wrote about how Audio Hijack is not scriptable. And I said, I keep meaning to ask them to make it scriptable, and then I stop myself because I'm like, why would anyone invest in AppleScript now?
Sure.
Like, yeah. there might be something else coming, but and he gave me, you know, he said the same thing, right? And I was like, you know, there you should make this automatable in some way, but for now it's not automatable, and there are a few things in the interface that can't be controlled by a menu item, and so I had to basically say, click this thing, click this thing here, that and take a screenshot of it. And then I can do everything else. But I have to do this one step that there's no way to do it with a menu item or an emulated keystroke. So I had to do that that way. Anyway, I that for people who haven't tried Keyboard Maestro, it's got a weird interface. I don't like it. I wish Peter Lewis would revamp it. It's been the same interface for a very long time, and the idea that I don't know, it's a very specific complaint, which is you have to call up the list of all of the things that a macro can do in order to drag them in. When you're editing a macro, it doesn't actually let you just leave them open, and it covers up all the other macros when it does it. It like slides up. It's just really bad. It shouldn't be like that. But it's so powerful, and it gets you into a lot of things where there's no scriptability in terms of like official Apple scriptability, and it's driving, you know, it's faking menu selections and key clicks and mouse clicks and all of those things in order to do it. Which brings me to my larger point, which is that I wrote a big piece that I've also been thinking about for the last few months, and it keeps evolving. But basically, it was originally called something like, "What's the Future of User Automation on Apple's Platforms?" And I was like, well, that's what this article is about. But I'm just going to make the headline, "The Mac Needs Shortcuts," because that's like, let's cut to the chase here. I can automate things on iOS way easier than I can on the Mac at this point, even with all the power the Mac has. Because Apple stuff is dying on the vine or has died on the vine. Good Mac developers like Rogue Amoeba are not supporting it with their apps because they just don't see the point. And on iOS, Shortcuts is really good. And in fact, Shortcuts is everything that I hoped Automator would be that it never grew into. So I've reached the point now where it's like, instead of it being, whoa, what's Apple going to do? It's got this thing over there and it's got this thing over here. Now I've flipped it to, oh yeah, that thing is the thing. Shortcuts. That's it. That's the future of user automation on Apple's platforms. It needs to be everywhere. It needs to be on the Mac. We need to embrace it, and Apple needs to extend it because it's still not as good as it should be, even on iOS, where every app has its own internal. You know, I wrote the article because I was largely prompted by I've got a JavaScript based macro in OneWriter on the iPad that I wanted to put in. Tayo, I think, which also has JavaScript macro support. But guess what? They use completely different JavaScript models, so the macros don't cross over, and you have to rewrite them if you want to use them. And learn a whole new toolbox with different rules for Tayo than are in OneWriter. And I had that moment of like, this is why the platform owner needs to be present. This is why Apple needs to say, okay, here's how we're going to do this. And you don't need to build your own macro system. Just kick it out to a shortcut. But Apple needs to do that, and they haven't done that either.
Yeah, no, I agree. Shortcuts on the Mac seems like a thing that is overdue, and it would be a lot helpful. Because the whole thing, AppleScript, Automator, you know, Automator. What can you say about Automator other than it feels like a less good shortcut?
It's enormous missed opportunity. Well, that's the thing, is that I never thought Automator was very good. I used it, but it was so frustrating because it never lived up to its potential in terms of...
It was so hard to just figure out how to do things. Right. Shortcuts is very similar, but it's better.
Yeah, that's it. Shortcuts is not easy, and I would argue that maybe at some level, user automation is never going to be easy because it's never, for the masses, I think is never a reality. I think it's not going to happen. You are looking for a more power user, but Shortcuts is like, it does Automator better, and it's got way more things that it can do, and the app ecosystem on that platform has embraced it in a way that Automator was never really embraced. But like Automator, I think Automator doesn't even do conditionals. Like Automator never got, talk about things that Apple releases and then just kind of walks away from. Like Automator never really got better. And Shortcuts is like, what if Automator was invented 15 years later and then work was put into making it better? Because it is so much better and it is really good.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've been able to grok Shortcuts in a way that Automator never really clicked for me. And I think that it's shown itself to be the superior model. And that's one of those interesting cases where it's like, you know, fundamentally not something built inside of Apple, right? Like, that to me is fascinating, right? Because AppleScript Automator, you know, in some ways they had to be homegrown, right? Like, no one could make AppleScript adopted by Apple if it weren't Apple. Whereas Shortcuts was a third-party app, and they're like, this is so good, let's buy it and integrate it into the system,
right?
Which is wild when you think about it. And it should absolutely make the jump to Mac, and certainly the ability of things like running iOS stuff natively on M1 and, you know, Mac Catalyst feels like, yeah, you could do this. It's going to take some work because all those apps that are on your Mac that don't play with Shortcuts yet, like, they're going to want to build in support, and, you know, you're going to want to bridge stuff with AppleScript and Automator until it's all sort of working on its own. But if they're not working on that already somewhere inside Apple, I will eat my hat. My hat is very old and grody. I don't want to do that.
I mean, Steve Trevor Smith has shown that, like, Shortcuts already kind of exists on the Mac inside the Home app. Like, and all the pieces are there. The challenge is not getting the Shortcuts app over on the Mac. The challenge is, how do you tie it into apps that are not like just the Catalyst apps that are on the Mac? How do you tie it into other Mac apps? And that means you got to do an Apple Events bridge. You got to write a bunch of plugins that just work specifically on the Mac. You've got to find a method for Mac apps to say, like iOS apps can, here are things I can do using Shortcuts. You've got to define what the inter-app communication method is going to be. Are you going to use Apple Events? Are you going to use something that's based on what happens on iPad? That's the stuff that they have to do, and I hope that they're doing it. I think that the fear I have is that since Sal Segovian left Apple, that there's nobody in charge of user automation at Apple, that there's the Shortcuts guys, which is fine. But, like, again, it's not just Shortcuts, right? There's more to that story that's a little bit broader. And the one that has come up a few times, I mentioned JavaScript earlier. Like, I think the other part of this is that Apple should probably say, and if you really want to go all out, here is how you write scripts that automate things. And, like, you know, Sal Segovian ended up going to Omni Group and working with them on their whole JavaScript-based automation system. And that's cross-platform. Like, literally, you can write a script to control Omni Outliner on iOS and move it to the Mac, and it controls Omni Outliner on macOS. Like, it's the same. Imagine that. It's the same. And I feel like Apple needs to do that, too. But is that Shortcuts? Is that really the job of the people who are working on Shortcuts to do that? Or is that somebody else to sort of say, we do need some, like, higher level things, and we need this all to work together? And I don't know if there's a vision for that, but I would take Shortcuts coming to the Mac and being the next generation of user automation on the Mac, because my example in my article is, like, you know, writing link list posts for six colors on the iPad. I just find an article I like and I select the part I want to quote, and I go to the share button and I choose make a linked list item, and I have a shortcut that fires off and it opens text in a text editor. And on the Mac, it is this combination of Keyboard Maestro and services and AppleScript and BBEdit and doing things in the document in BBEdit, because that it has to be done somewhere in an app. And I could probably simplify it a little bit, but not a lot, because, like, there's no there, like, Safari alone, like, isn't friendly for that on the Mac, because the Mac hasn't done a good job with the sharing infrastructure in the same way that that iOS has. So if you kicked Shortcuts in and had it be able to be kicked off from the share menu on the Mac as well, that would kind of open up a lot of possibilities too. So I hope they do it. I think it would not be a bad bet. If you're making bets, don't do this, people, on WWDC announcements. I think Shortcuts on Mac is entirely possible for this next version. But there are a lot of complications there. So that's why I wrote it now. That's one of the reasons I wrote it now, is, like, well, WWDC is coming up, and this allows me to sort of, like, lay down something and say, well, this is a thing that I think should happen, and we'll see. And we'll either be able to say, hey, look, it happened, or we'll be able to say, they didn't do it. But it needs it, because the Mac is great, but the Mac is just, it's got old stuff and it's got stuff that is like, Keyboard Maestro is brilliant, but like, why do I have to have it look at my screen and click things? That's so wrong. Why is it that Audio Hijack doesn't support automation of any kind? And it's not their fault, because I can't even bear to write the email to say, please add it, because I wouldn't listen to me, because it's very obvious that AppleScript and Automator is not going to, even if it sticks around, it's not going to be around in any way that anybody cares about it. It's a legacy kind of configuration, and what's next? So, I don't know. I've got that Home app I wrote about that lets me control HomeKit from the Mac. One of the funny quirks of that app, which is called Home Control, is that it supports URLs for automation. So like on my little Stream Deck, I can turn my smart lights in my office on and off. And that's not using AppleScript or anything. It's literally a URL that launches that app, or that sends that URL to that app, and that app does automation. And I thought, that's interesting. Like, is that the future of Mac automation? Is all URL schemes? Because, you know, that's sort of how scripting works on iOS. And it's not elegant, but it works. Like, it works surprisingly well, actually. So, I don't know. Obviously, I care about this stuff in part because I feel like I want to make computers do my work for me, because they're computers and that they should serve me. They should, you know. That's it.
I mean, for now.
Machines, yeah, for now. They're machines that are built to do repetitive tasks well. Why am I doing... I should never have to do... Nobody should do repetitive tasks on a computer, right? Like, anything where it's just like, click here, copy, then paste, you know, then click here and then paste, and then do it again, and then do it again, and do it again. It's like, no, you should never have to do that. And that's why automation is great. But, but Apple needs to fix it on the Mac, because it's just kind of been drifting for the last, I don't know, 5 years more, 10 years more, yeah. since Automator was announced, 15 years, I don't know.
It's been a while. It hasn't done much.
Well, June 7th.
We'll see.
June 7th.
We'll see. June 7th,
the word
WWDC.
Came out. June 7th is the answer. WWDC 2021. We're going to be... We get to cover it like we did last time, which I'm excited about. I'm gonna make an announcement. I don't know if I even told you this. I think I did, but I liked what we did where we covered the sessions. We watched the session videos, like picked out session videos and wrote little sort of like, here's in today's sessions. I thought that was really great. So we're gonna do that again, and Stephen Hackett's gonna help out too. So we're gonna cover even more of WWDC week. Stephen Hackett's going to pitch
more. Wow. Okay. All right. Well,
so because basically I had a flashback to, I was very happy with what happened, but I also had a flashback to that spreadsheet that you and I had where we had to mark down the things, and it's like, oh boy, I'm going to watch 5 things today. Mm. Right. And I thought, why don't I just get somebody else to do it with us? Lighten the load on all of us. So Stephen's going to pitch in there, and we'll give him last pick in the draft though. We'll give him the bad sessions.
Fair enough. Yeah. He's not going to want to do anything that's on a vintage Mac anyway.
He's going to pick Mac stuff, and it's fine. It's fine. But I'm looking forward to that, because that was actually, other than the complete lack of socializing, from a coverage standpoint, so much better
to easier.
Be sitting at your desk covering WWDC. So much better. And we don't do that usually. We're there, and you've got to walk around, and you gotta go to dinner, and you gotta go to parties, and you gotta talk to people, and then you gotta write things. And like, the
when do you squeeze that in? When do you squeeze in the, I need an hour to write a story.
Exactly. And so although I miss the in-person thing, and we'll welcome it back if it ever comes back, I'm very happy about the coverage we did of last year's conference.
From a professional capacity, I felt like it went really well. From a personal capacity, it was certainly a lot quieter.
Not as fun, but I think it was really good, and I think our coverage is really good, breaking down those sessions and gleaming what we could out of what Apple was doing there. So let's do it again. What do you say?
Let's do the coverage again. Yes, sounds good. Sounds like a plan. We'll see if anything happens between now and then.
And your Boston Red Sox hat is back in season. So congratulations, Dan.
Woohoo!
That's right.
I've been wearing it for the last few days, actually.
Yeah.
Because it's warm enough here to do that.
I got a new Giants hat this year.
Mm.
New for the season. Put it on. It's now in the rotation as of opening day. It's in the rotation. My old one has faded to, because it's black and orange, my old one has faded to sort of a gray brown. Yeah. It's like
I used to wear
hat. New hat.
I used to wear a Giant hat for many years because I was a Giants fan when I was a kid because my dad was, I guess, because he went to Berkeley for grad school.
Yeah,
so
right.
He was a Giants fan. And I actually, for a long time, I wore a, I had a New York Giants.
Oh, no, that's good.
Because I was, Willie Mays was my guy. He was my favorite player. So I had a New York Giants hat for a long time as well.
That's good. That's good. Maybe somebody will have to get you a New York Giants hat again sometime.
Oh, man. I don't know. I haven't worn one of those in years. I always liked it because it confused people, right? Because it looks like a Mets hat.
Yeah, but it's,
but it's black.
It's the wrong
instead of blue.
Colors. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
And people are like, why do you have a black Mets hat? I'm like, it's New York Giants, man. Don't you know anything?
Or you could get like the Yomiuri Giants, Tokyo Giants.
Oh,
that's also orange and black, but it's got the YG on it. I don't know. Anyway, baseball hat corner. It's baseball season. Yes. I wrote about literally the only of my list of iOS apps that I wanted to run on M1 Max. The only one that does, that has not been removed from the App Store, is the MLB iPad app, which does run on Apple Silicon Macs, and you can put the video in picture-in-picture, and it's great. So yesterday I was sitting outside, and I had a baseball game. I had the Padre game on in a little picture-in-picture floating window. It was beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. So one app.
There we go. Yeah, the only one I have that I think ran on iOS that I have on my M1 Mac is Authy.
Oh, right.
It's better than the Mac version.
Sure. All right, well, we will be back next week. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.